Welcome to Backyard Oasis, a podcast designed by and for older adults living in the beautiful Pioneer Valley of Western Massachusetts and produced in the tech studios at Greenfield Community College in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Backyard Oasis reaches out to older adults who seek knowledge to help them live more thoughtfully, healthily, and happily, who hope to inspire others with their ideas, and who serve their communities in the interest of the greater good. Hi, this is Dennis Lee. I'm calling this episode of Backyard Oasis, Behind the Scenes with a TV Anchor. My guest today is Dave Mattson. Dave's been part of the Western Mass media since 1970. He started at WHMP in Northampton. He moved to do some other radio in the area and then ended up on the tube to Channel 22 and eventually to 40. It's really amazing that he could stay in his hometown and the home area. It's really terrific. He claims he retired, by the way. They had a whole big thing. He retired from Channel 40. That's what he said. But he still shows up on Channel 40, and you hear his voice all the time. Dave, really, really nice to see you.
Good to see you, Dennis. Yeah. Somebody tell me I've got the strangest retirement.
Yeah. Well, they made a big deal out of it, as they well should have. I mean, you're part of the community, and it was a big deal when you retired. But I'm thrilled for you that you're staying busy. So you started on radio. I want to talk a little bit about this. So you started on radio at WHMP, which I also ended up at one point.
Yep.
And we know a lot of the same people. We never worked together. We never actually worked for a company that paid us together. I think the only thing we ever did was in East Hampton, Massachusetts. There was a fireworks on July 4th, and we emceed that.
The Kiwanis. Right. Yeah, I was in the Kiwanis for years.
But we never worked together, but we know everybody that I know, I think, or just about, you know?
That is. It's a small world.
Yeah, small world. So I want to know how you started on TV, and I'm interested about the fact whether or not somebody said to you, you know, Dave, you should be on TV, or somehow you just thought that I can do this. How'd that come about?
Well, no, I was, when I was at HMP, this is in the mid 70s now. I'd been married for about a year. We happened into a house and I needed extra money. So I applied for a part-time job in the audio booth and running camera at Channel 22. And this was the spring of 75. And they hired me. And for that summer and probably for the next 4 years on and off, I worked with them. And I did the Chalices Out Salvation, the Sunday morning mass that they do and they've done for years, the newscast, voiceovers, and all that kind of stuff. But over the course of that time, I got to meet a bunch of people because back then it was locally owned. It was owned by Bill Putnam. And so, I mean, it was all local. And in 79, they had an opening for an anchor. Guy left and went to Hawaii, of all places. And I knew it, and I watched it. And I had applied for a reporter's job there earlier on, but I didn't get it. And so it was like, you know, I was very happy at HMP. Doing the morning program, it was just everybody. That we're all friends. I mean, we're like my second family.
And we should mention, because both of us worked there. We both, Dave and I think one of the reasons that I always have enjoyed knowing Dave, and I think it's probably back to him to me and me to him. We both really believe in community stuff. We liked. It wasn't just an ego thing being out. We liked being in the community and feeling a part of something.
That was, and that was always part of my growing up with my mom and dad. They were always involved in the community. And when I got to HMP, Joe Fennessy and Tommy Hennessy and the DeRose family, another, working for local owners again. It instilled that in us. And I didn't do it because it was part of my job. I did it because I liked it. Same with you. We liked doing it.
Yeah.
And,
I remember when I first was at HMP, I think the guys at the time thought I was doing it because of ego or something. And I said to one of the guys who I liked, I said, just so you know, I'm doing it because, just like you just said, I enjoy being out there.
You like people.
And if I'm going to live here, I don't want to just get in the car after I do a shift and go home. I want to be a part in the community. And you feel the same way. And that's why I think we kind of relate to each other when it comes to that anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, to me, it's one of those things that I look at. If any success that I've had, I think maybe 25% of it is because of what I did on the air. The other 75% is what I did in the community.
Yep.
Because it people see you in a different light and they go, well, he's involved in this and, you know, and maybe we'll watch. But that wasn't the reason why I did it. And so I was working with this guy, Tommy LaMarche. Tommy was going to BU and he would come in and direct on the weekends. And by 1979, Tommy was the station manager. So out of the blue, in August of 79, I got a phone call from him. He says, you know, we got an anchor opening here. And I said, yeah. He said, Bill Pepin and I think you can do this. He says, so come down and audition. So I went down and I auditioned the next day. I used to wear contact lenses, but working mornings, it's like I couldn't put them in. So I was wearing glasses. But then I realized, well, I got to start wearing contact lenses again. So I went down. I got some contact lenses. And I auditioned with John Quill. And, I got to tell you something. I was nervous, but I was comfortable. And I'd watched John, and it just so happened that Hurricane David was churning in the Gulf of Mexico. So it gave me something to kind of play off of. And so I did the audition. I thought it went well. They didn't say anything to me. And next day I get a call from Tommy LaMarche. He said, hey, let's meet for dinner. So I said to my wife, Linda, I said, well, either he's going to offer me the job or because we're friends, he's going to let me down easy.
Right, right.
Well, he offered me the job. And I was thinking I was making $10,000 a year at HMP, barely scraping by.
Got you, yeah.
They offered me $16,000. Right. I thought, oh, my God, we got it made.
Yeah.
And so I took the job. One of the hardest things for me to do was to go to Joe and Charlie and Peter and tell them I was leaving. You know, I started there when I was 19 and I got married while I was there. All my friends were there. My son was born while I was there. It was a huge part of my life.
Right.
But the nice part is after I took the job at 22, I was still doing some stuff for HMP. Right.
Well, I think they probably were happy for you. They were sorry to have you go.
Yeah.
But obviously you're moving up the ladder. Or at least trying something new.
Yeah.
So they probably were, knowing Charlie, I think he would say, well, good for Dave. Sorry he's out the door, but.
He did.
You know, do you have any memories of the first newscast you did on the air?
I
was going to ask that question, but I remember the first music I played on the air, on the radio, was Lovin' Spoonful. Summer in the City. My hand was shaking to start the turntable. I was terrified after the news ended. This was in New Hampshire.
Do you want to explain what a turntable is?
Oh, I know. That's right. What's a turntable, right? It goes around and you put records.
That's right.
45s.
Yep.
You know, those are small. Do I have to explain? Alex, do you know what a 45 is? Well, Alex is smart. He's better than the rest of us. But so you know what that is. But I was terrified, but I remember shaking and starting Lovin' Spoonful.
Yeah.
I wondered if you remembered the very first day you were on the air as a TV anchorman.
Yeah. I mean, I had rehearsed. I had worked at HMP and 22 doing run-throughs for 3 weeks. So I was working the morning shift, and then I was going in and working until 11 o'clock.
Wow.
So I left HMP on the 14th of September on our fifth wedding anniversary. I started at 22 Monday the 17th. And I was on the air with, there were two anchors. There was myself and a guy named Norm Peters. And the schedule that Putnam had was we worked 3 days on, 3 days off because he always wanted to have a main anchor. And he tried to get NBC to do the same thing. And they looked at him and said, what are you, nuts? but it worked really well. So I anchored that first night with Norm. And everything went well.
Do you remember the first story?
I don't.
Or the first few stories?
I don't remember. It was because I was so worked up with just all the lights and everything else. But I do remember I went and I bought a beige suit from Sears.
You still wear it, right?
From the Johnny Carson, yeah, I wish. From the Johnny Carson collection. And so it comes to the end of the newscast, and Norm turned to me and he said, hey, they want me to introduce you and tell people about you. And he said, what's your last name again? Yeah. And I said, it's Madsen, Dave Madsen. So he says, and tonight we'd like to introduce our new anchor, Dave Marsden.
Oh, geez.
So that was my introduction.
Oh, into, oh no.
And it taught me at that point. Well, I think I always felt this way is never take myself seriously. Take what I do seriously,
yeah.
But never take myself seriously. Yeah, yeah. It was, and that was my introduction.
Yeah. Well, you're not like Ted Baxter. I mean, that's the stereotype of an anchorman.
Yeah,
comedic wise.
Well, Norm kind of was.
Yeah. Okay.
But a good guy, and I mean a real veteran, but it was just, and I never said anything to him. It's like, well, what's the point of correcting him? I figured if at worst I'd have to change my name to Marsden. So.
that's a great story. Now, I know that there's so much more to being a TV anchor than the half hour that people see. So I thought we would kind of sneak around the corner over your shoulder in the studio. Sure.
Can I tell you one story from HMP, though?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
My first year, I was working a Saturday shift, 2 to 7. That was how I got hired.
Yep.
And Joe Fennessy had done basketball, high school basketball and UMass basketball. And so he asked me, and he lost the guy who did the color with him. He says to me, do you know anything about high school basketball? And I said, yeah, sure. I didn't know a whole heck of a lot about high school basketball, but all I knew is it paid $10 a game. So I'm a year out, about a year and a half out of East Hampton High School, Dennis. And so I go with Joe to cover an East Hampton High School basketball game. And I think I'm Mr. Big Shot.
So
I walk in, I got my little suitcase with the gear, and we walk in there, and I run into the assistant principal. Let's tell you the kind of mark I made on East Hampton High School. And I said, hi, Mr. Namowitz, how are you? He says, Bob, it's so good to see you. It just blew up my bubble. I thought, Mr. Big Shot coming back to school with my little suitcase.
Oh, well, but you survived. But you survived.
I survived. Yeah. I survived, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about what your day, normal day, not now you're doing other stuff, doing some part-time things in your retirement. I put that in quotes. Yeah, I believe that. Anyway, give us an idea. So the average person probably sees you for a half hour, but has no idea what you have to do. So give us what would be an average day in the life of a TV anchorman.
All right. Well, it changed a lot through the years with ownership changes. So this is when Meredith bought us, and they own Channel 3 in Springfield. So when they came over to us in 2014 to 1300 Liberty Street, we had CBS, ABC, and Fox. They were doing a 4 o'clock news, and they were doing a 6 o'clock. The original plan was to split it up and keep them separate. But then they decided to go under the title Western Mass News. So we were broadcasting our 10 o'clock news on Fox, the morning news, and then the evening news. We were doing a 4 o'clock. And so I'd get in 1:30, 2 o'clock for what I was paid for an 8-hour shift.
Right.
But I was a stickler for going over scripts and writing a lot of my own stuff. I never wanted to go on the air. My biggest fear was to go on the air and read cold. I lived up to that fear every now and then, but, you know, you're working with a lot of young reporters and young writers and, you know, in many instances, the writing isn't exactly, and I would change it to my style. And so I would go through every script. And
so you didn't write the whole script. They gave you they wrote the script.
Yeah. I wrote a lot of the reporters would go out and they would do their stories and they wrote those, but I would write some of the stuff in between. And so I would do that until 4:15. And then we tape promos and things like that for the news. Then we go on live at 4:00. On CBS 3, and it's the 4 o'clock's now on ABC 40, but do that. Then we do the show, the 5 o'clock on ABC 40, and then we do the 6 o'clock on ABC and CBS.
So you're doing the same newscast over and over?
The 4 and the 5 were, because they were on different channels. The 6 was always different. Then in between, I'd grab something for dinner, and I always while I was eating dinner, I was always working and starting on the 11 o'clock. And again, it was just me anchoring it. So I was working with a producer, and we would tackle the show, and, you know, we'd go over what we want to put in the show, because I was also managing editor for a long time. So kind of overseeing the shows. And I enjoyed that. And I produced some of the shows too. It was funny because I remember the first time I produced a newscast and put the whole thing together, I found I took more pride in that credit than I did the first time I anchored. Because it was, I enjoyed doing that too. It's like I was never one of those who could just go in here, give me my script, and sit behind the chair. It's just I couldn't. I had to be involved. And
well, obviously something worked, Dave.
It did. I tell you, Dennis, there were times after I started at 22 because I was having issues with my eyes and the contact lenses, and I wound up, my eyes got infected, and about 3 weeks into the job at 22 in 1979, I thought, I have made a huge mistake. I should have stayed in radio. But then it settled down because in my first 3 weeks at 22, the second week or the third week, we had the Windsor Locks tornado. We had a snowstorm in October. We had the installation of Pope John Paul II. But it was all stuff that I was able to do. And my radio background helped me with it because I could ad lib, and that I still love to this day love radio. I attribute everything I have to radio, the skills that I developed, the ad lib skills, and everything else. And it helped me along the way. And the sad thing now is there's really no training ground in radio for kids.
No, that's true. There's no reason, and there's probably a morning show somewhere.
Yeah.
It used to be you start at night, work your way down to and to become a drive person. But that's right now, I don't think that's there. I think it's very sad.
Especially for news, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the days at HMP with Ron Hall with local news, SPR with Cy Becker, Richard Lavenier at WREB. And, you know, all of these real veterans who were, you know, they're old school.
Yeah.
And, I look at it, it's like you and me. We were kind of the gap in between them, and we had to learn from them. Derm Caldwell, Keith Silver, those guys, you know.
I was going to ask you later on about some of the people, and you worked with Jack O'Neill and Ray Herschel, good people, a lot of memories there. Let's talk a little bit about memories from some of the stories you covered. Which you mentioned a few when you first started, but what are some of the highlights of your career? Dave Mattson, this is your life.
Well, my first exposure to breaking news was that Windsor Locks storm, the tornado. That was, I can't remember what day of the week it was, but it was in the afternoon, about 2 o'clock, and I sat next to Jordan St. John. I remember Jordan.
Yeah, I do know Jordan. Yeah.
And we lost power, which we always did on Proven Mountain. But I mean, a huge storm rolled in.
That's an Agawam, right?
That's an Agawam on the mountain.
Yeah.
So I walked to the back of the building in the studio there, and they had two barn doors. And there's water cascading into the studio like you wouldn't believe. So then we find out, Jordan had a little portable radio. We're listening to TIC in Hartford about the storm that went through Windsor Locks and Pequannock, and it came up to Feeding Hills. So that night we were on live, and on the studio floor was like 3 inches of water. So there was that one, the 95 tornado in Great Barrington, and then, of course, the one in 2011 in Springfield. That one, I think I'm most proud of what we did then. We were on the air for about 6 hours straight, and that was my first taste of the impact of social media. And how we use social media
what
and
year
people.
That event?
It was 2011, June 1st, 2011, and people were texting us here. This is this here and this there, and it was just we use them as field reporters. Tell us what happened. What do you have any damage? What have you seen?
And your ability to ad lib and do that is vital in that situation, and to make people comfortable enough. So they can tell you what they saw and do it easily.
And to keep a sense of calm, too, because there were so many rumblings of, they saw the tornado here and they saw a tornado there. And people were afraid. And that always bothered me afterwards, too, that it's part of our job is not to alarm. And that there were all of a sudden, there's all these tornado watches and everything else. And I remember growing up, we never had those here, ever. It's like all of a sudden, you know, but obviously things were changing. But the 1985, the shooting deaths of Alan Beauregard, Michael Scavina in Springfield.
Police,
John DiNapoli in Holyoke in 1999. Right. Those had a real impact. The Worcester firefighters. The first time I ever broke down on the air, Dennis, was I was doing the funeral for the Worcester firefighters who died in that warehouse building. It was it was early in December, and so we're doing the funeral, and I'm doing a narration along the way, and all of a sudden it hit me how those firefighters left their houses that Friday, you know, said goodbye to their kids, said goodbye to their spouses, went to work, I'll see you tonight. And they never came home. And it just all of a sudden hit me. And it's like I could feel myself starting to go. And I just let it go. And a lot of people wouldn't do that. And I remember people saying to me afterwards, it's like, you know what, you showed you're human. It's like, well, how can you do that and not have it affect you? But I mean, it was stories like that. And, you know, and I got to do different things. You know, when I was at 22, we did a week of news in Hawaii. To this day, I still don't know why we did. I saw the last shuttle launch, was at 9/11 for the 10th anniversary. To be able to do things like that, a Democratic National Convention I went to, just things I never would have been able to do in normal life.
Yeah. Well, you have a lot of memories, and that's. I read something.
Ask me what I did yesterday. I won't be able to tell you.
I understand. I understand completely. You know, you're really incredibly lucky, but you earned it by being in your home area. A lot of us in the business. I was from Connecticut, but I had to travel a lot of different places. I ended up in Springfield. I ended up in Northampton, but you're in your home area, which I think is just wonderful. To be able to say you did that.
Yeah. I have been lucky. And, well, you know, Ray and I talk about this a lot.
Ray Herschel.
Because yep. Ray's, it was the same thing with Ray. Ray was born and raised in Chicopee. And early on, I mean, you know, Ray probably more than me could have gotten a job in a bigger market if he wanted to. But we both decided that once we got married, and our stories about meeting our wives and everything else are pretty much the same thing. Ray met Maureen through Maureen's sister at the TV station. And within 5 or 6 months, or 6 to 9 months, we were married.
Yeah. I was there in the building at HYN in 40. I was there.
Yeah.
I remember that courtship. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny you should mention it. But,
you know, so, I mean, so our career paths were very similar. Yeah. And so we used to say, it's like, you know what? It became more than just us, that there's so many people who put their job before their family. And in many instances, in having to be there at different times, yes, we had to do that. But as a whole, decided that, you know, we're not going to drag our kids all over the place, that we're comfortable, we're in our homes. I think a lot of it is fact being with people who I grew up with and went to school with, it kept me grounded. It's like if I thought I was starting to be Mr. TV, I'd get a good kick in the ass, and that would be the end of that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
And I think it helped me. Yeah. I really do. Yeah.
One of the areas I want to mention, which I've always been fascinated about, and I'm guessing you would think the same thing, the media, whether it's radio or TV, the fact is, and I have like a few examples here, people don't know you, most people. Okay, you had people that you went to school with, friends, but they watch you. You don't know who's watching you on a Tuesday night or a Sunday morning or whenever it was. Same thing when I was on the radio. You just did your job. You weren't thinking about the numbers of people. You were trying to please your boss and just go in and get through the day and have it work right. But you really have an effect on people, and you were kind enough to ask me to be on your podcast. Okay, so I want to tell you, I want to relate it to you rather than say I'm just talking about me. I've had two people since that podcast. I got a call one day, came home about 5:30 at night. The phone rang. This guy says, "Hi, this is so-and-so. We were we worked together at WSPR. Hadn't talked to him since 1978. He was living in Connecticut. I lost track of him. We were friends. He watched your podcast with me. He contacted me. We now are back in contact, and it's wonderful. And that would never have happened if I didn't do your podcast. And secondly, another one. Just last week, a week before, email. Guy said, did you work in New Hampshire? Did you do that? Are you Dennis Lee? And I said, yeah. I wrote him back. I said, how'd you find me? He said, oh, I happened to see something on YouTube, Western Mass and Dave Mattson. I said, that's incredible. I mean, two people that I, because of your podcast, you and I were just talking like we are now, very relaxed and just know each other. And that
we're doing it by Zoom because it was COVID.
Yeah, but I mean, isn't that wonderful? That
it is.
The magic of that.
Well, it's podcasts. You know, we talked about this before. They're the new radio.
Yeah,
and where you can do an extended conversation. I did one with Gary Puckett of Gary Puckett and the Union Gap. I met him at the Big E.
Yeah. Always liked his music.
Yeah. And I met him at the Big E, and I got his email address because he wanted a copy of the show that we did. So we kept in contact, which is, it's like, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm friends with Gary Puckett. And so I had him do the podcast. So, and we did video part of it, and I looked at it. The thing had 20,000 views. And it's like, whoa, it's his fan base. You know, and who just follow him. But, you talk about when we did Reddit News and everything. I think you and I are very similar to the fact that I never thought of myself as addressing thousands of people. I always focused on one person.
You're 100%. That's I try to picture somebody, a relative, a friend that I was talking to.
Yep.
We both come from that school.
And I think that's a key to success. Yeah. I really do. It's like, it drives me crazy when, hi, good evening, everyone. It's no, you're in my living room.
Yeah.
You're talking to me.
Yeah. I have one other thing that's complimentary to you. I was in the diner in Florence, Massachusetts, Miss Flo's Diner. Waitress was working there. She's a school teacher, but she was working part-time for the summer. So one day she said, what are you doing these days? And I just said, just in passing, oh, I'm having lunch. Who are you going to have lunch with? Oh, I'm having lunch with Dave Mattson. Oh, I love him. He's my hero. I love him. And she goes on for like 2 minutes.
God.
No, but I mean, the point is, she doesn't know you. She's never met you. But you made a connection with her. I said, have you ever met Dave? She said, I saw him once in Costco, but I didn't go up to him. I didn't want to bother him. I said, well, if you meet Dave, he's just a guy like everybody else is, and you'll like him, I guarantee you. She said, well, I'll keep that in mind if I see him in Costco.
I hope, you know, because to me, that's the ultimate compliment.
Well, I thought it was
when
wonderful.
When someone comes up.
I mean, I thought it was wonderful. You don't know her.
No.
And you touched her. And you made a difference in her life. And isn't that something?
Well, because you do go through spells. It's like, is anybody listening? Is anybody watching? And then something like that happens, and then you realize you do. And when I got through, the number of people I heard from was, I was absolutely overwhelmed. Because you just don't, sometimes you just don't think, it's like, all right, you know, I'm doing this, and it does. And it taught me a lesson. Is never take that for granted.
Right.
Ever.
Well, so in other words, you were at 22 for how many years?
From 79 to 91, so about a little under 12.
And then at 40?
Well, I did. I went to Friendly's restaurants. Yeah. And notice it's been downhill for Friendly's ever since.
Because you left. I'm sure
no,
that's, I'm sure that's the reason. Yeah.
Well, I left 22 in June 1991 to take a job because my kids were young enough and I was never home. And I thought, well, I'll try this. And Dennis, I got there and they really had nothing for me to do. And it got to the point where every day about 2 o'clock, they would bring ice cream out that hadn't been hard packed. So my game of the day was, ooh, what flavor today? And so my cholesterol went up when
Are you telling me that Dave Mattson really was a food tester? Is that what we're getting to?
Pretty much. Yeah, that's what it came down to.
The scoop here, folks, with the ice cream. Scoop here. Dave Matson was a food tester.
I was a food tester. Yeah, but yeah. What I found, it was a good lesson for me because I had walked away from the only thing I was ever really comfortable doing. It was the only thing I ever wanted to do. I mean, because I remember from, because I growing up, I listened to HYN, Bud Stone, Phil D, all those guys. And I knew I wanted to be in broadcasting. And radio in particular. So from the time I was like eight years old. But there were really no outlets for us back then. It's like, you know, what, and so I, you know, when I finally got to UMass, I started doing stuff with MUA and WFCR. And I always tell the story, and I told this to this guy directly. His name is Art Cohen. And Art was the news director at FCR at the time. This is in early 1970. And so I was volunteering. And I did a few things there. And about 2 weeks in, he says to me, "You know, I really think you should find another line of work." I was devastated. So, but I dug my heels in and I stayed in. So about 5 or 6 years ago, Jacob Wyckoff, who did weather for us, was doing some freelance stuff down at Channel 4. He ran into Art Cohen. Art said, "Oh, yeah, I remember Dave." And I said to Jacob, I said, "The next time you see him, remind him that he told me I should find another line of work."
And what's this guy doing? He's probably...
He's at WBZ doing radio, right. Radio news. And RV is a very good newsman. Yeah. And he wrote back to me and he said, "I am so sorry." He said, "I was in a bad way." And I said, "Well, I ignored you, so it worked out okay."
That's a great story.
Isn't it? But
that is a great story. Yeah, Let's talk about what you're doing now. Now, I was kidding you a little bit because you are officially retired. You're not an anchor man anymore, but you're doing stuff.
Yeah. When I got through, it was always, we were always going to do something. And so initially it was going to be a podcast. And we did that for about a year. I started it. It was supposed to start in October of 2019, but I was going away, and then we had a family tragedy in November, and so we put things off until the beginning of 2020. We started doing this right around the time COVID started. So I was doing some, we were doing it from our MGM studio. So I did that, and I was doing radio newscasts for three stations every day, and I recorded at home and sent it into them. I still do that. But about a year into it, they decided, you know what, let's shift this to doing a Sunday morning program. This is going on, we're going on 4 years now. This week, I think we're taping our 183rd show, where we talk with politicians, newsmakers. I like it because it keeps me involved. I go in one day a week for a couple hours. I do a lot of research. I've had Senators Warren and Markey, Governor Healey, all our congressmen, local senators and reps, and just people who are doing different things. And I like it. It's the perfect thing for me right now. I couldn't do the Monday through Friday stuff again. There's a stamina thing, I think, more than anything else. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you decided to join us today, come up to Greenfield, because you drove up from East Hampton, which is not a long drive, but it's a drive, so I appreciate that. It's always great to see you. We ran into each other a couple weeks ago because your granddaughter is playing basketball for East Hampton.
That's the other part of what we're doing now. So.
Yeah, I don't know which is more important, probably the basketball, right?
Yes. I'm making up for things. Yeah, my son played basketball for Hampshire Regional for years, and they won Western Mass Championship.
And he's coaching now, right?
He's coaching Suburban, and I think he wants to coach high school too. We're fun with the other parents, and it's like they welcome us, it's different too, because part of our life now is a big part of our life is helping our son with he lost his wife and helping with our grandkids. So we're there every morning, and it's out of all I've done, Dennis, it's the best job ever.
Terrific. I have one final question. Do you miss having to put makeup on every day and worry how your hair looks?
I don't miss it because I put it on every day.
Wait a minute, he does have makeup on. I can see that. It's folks, it's pancake number two.
No, right? It's Bondo because I have to fill in the cracks. Look it up.
Oh, Dave Mattson, really thank you for joining us for the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
But it's just nice to know you, and whenever I run into you, I enjoy. And we just talk at the basketball game. I think your wife must have been calling your name from the bleachers because we talked for 20 minutes.
Great, you get us old. You get us old radio people together, and that's it.
Oh, my goodness. So glad you made the journey, Dave. Thank you for
joining us. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for being with us on Backyard Oasis.
This concludes today's podcast. We're always looking for new ideas, so feel free to reach out to Judy Raper, Associate Dean of Community Engagement at Greenfield Community College at 413-775-1819. If you have an idea you'd love to share. Special thanks to the creators of Backyard Oasis, Denise Schwartz, Chad Fuller, Dennis Lee, and Christine Copeland. Have a great day.